Everybody, I'm Don Landis. I'm an alcoholic. I'm fired up to be here. I'm excited, and it's all because of you. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for the feeling I had when I walked down that aisle and came in and heard the buzz, you know, the buzz of Alcoholics Anonymous. We all know about buzz, but this is a sober buzz, you know. And I just love it. It's the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. When we get together like that, you can just, it washes over you. You can just, I don't care what's going on in your life. And I'll tell you this, you know, before I start, you know, I had one of those weeks. In AA, my first sponsor taught me about the seemingly good and the seemingly bad. That sometimes it takes time for things to play out, and what you think is the seemingly bad turns out to be this. This week, not the seemingly bad. They just handed my rear end to me this week. You know, it's just one of those weeks where you're afraid to say, what's going to happen next? Because it might happen, you know what I mean? So I had one of those weeks, and I'm so grateful to be here with you, because there's a part of me going, boy, this is bad timing. I got a lot going on in business. And that little voice, that still voice, that God voice in me, you know, tells me, where else would I rather be than here this weekend with my people? I'm so glad. And I mean, you've been healing me with your laughter. You've been healing me with your energy. I love the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. I do this anytime I get a chance to travel and I'm around a group of people like you. You know, I'll find a corner. You know, and I'll just sit by myself and I'll close my eyes and I'll listen carefully to the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, everybody talking, nobody listening. You know, just those alcoholics waiting for that opening. It's almost my turn to talk. It's almost my turn to talk, you know. Oh, it's terrible, isn't it? You know, but I'm being honest, you know. My favorite words in the world are, what do you think, Don? You know. Yeah, we rarely say, I don't know. We usually have an answer prepared. And we'll make something up if we don't know. So it's just, so thank you for being here. And thanks to my friend Amanda just firing us up. Let's go. I mean, it's like, you're sitting there going, I don't like AA. I don't know, man, because that just fired everybody up. That's awesome. And I felt like I was taking a quiz. $40! Down to the left! 8 a.m.! You know, what do I win? You know, well, that was great. I'm on point. I should probably tell you I'm actually sober. I have a sobriety date. It's September 16th, 1991. I have 25 years sobriety. Oh, yeah. And I'm one of those annoying, grateful alcoholics. You know, I kind of applaud every day in my head. You know, like I wake up and I go, I don't drink whiskey. And I just think it excites me, you know. And I know, you know, the big book tells us cessation from drinking is but a beginning. And I get that. I get that. You know, you got to stop and drinking is the ticket they tear at the door to get into Alcoholics Anonymous. I get that. But I never want to overlook the blessed fact of my physical sobriety. In fact, I don't have to drink today. That there was a time I had to. I had lost the power of choice where the drink was concerned. I was a puppet at the end of a string, and somebody else was calling the shots. Like Bill Wilson writes in his story, if there was a boss eternal, it was the devil, and he certainly had me. And I know I had lost my life. I had lost my rights. I had turned everything worthwhile to King Alcohol. When I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous that September day in 1991, all the good was gone. And all the promises were broken. And all the dreams were crushed. And there was no safe direction anywhere I looked. And I thought to myself, it's come to this, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know they won't be able to help me. I was sure to the marrow of my bones that Alcoholics Anonymous would not be able to help me. And the reason I felt that way is I had been trying so very hard to quit drinking for so many years. I hadn't gone to AA, I hadn't gone to recovery, I hadn't gone to retreat, to treatment or anything like that. But I mean, I had gotten the gift of self-knowledge, you know, 6 years before I made it to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we're not talking about, I drank for a lot longer than that. I'm talking about where you know it's killing you. And most of us, when we get that gift of self-knowledge the first time, it feels powerful, doesn't it? Because self-knowledge is not delivered by a husband, a wife, children, an employer, a district attorney, an arresting officer, a doctor that's stitching you up and you don't feel the needle. That's not how self-knowledge is delivered. And I don't know how it was delivered in your case, but in mine it was a dirty motel room at 2 a.m. and there was screaming in the room. And I realized it was quiet in that room and the screaming was in my head. And there was a voice, my voice, saying over and over again, you're going to die if you don't do something about your drinking. And I remember having that moment of clarity in that dirty motel room at 2 a.m. And it felt powerful because for years, seemingly, they'd been talking to me about my drinking. And now I got it. And it felt like a valuable commodity. Now I understand. They've been talking to me about it. I thought they had the wrong guy. Now I'm going to be able. And I remember making up my mind I was going to quit drinking. And I thought it would be easy, like anything else I'd put my mind to in life. And I did what most of us do. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't get a sponsor. And I didn't get a home group. And I didn't work your 12 golden steps. And I didn't get active around here. And I quit drinking without you. Thank you very much. For 2 weeks. You know, now we talk about alcoholism as the family disease, and I'm telling you that 2 week brief period of recovery, I really think you can start to see the tentacles of alcoholism, the muscle of alcoholism, really start to spread out and damage the family. And this is why. Ignorance is bliss. See, when I'm your family member and you love me, I don't know that you're having backroom meetings about a guy like me. And you're talking about my drinking. And you're saying things like, what are we going to do about Don? You know, he's drinking himself to death, he's going to jail a lot, he's crashing cars, and we try to talk to him about it, he laughs it off. He thinks it's funny. He says, I'm a young man, I'm having a good time, mind your own business, you won't have to mind mine. He says the craziest stuff does. He got out of jail last week, you know what he said?
Well, everybody goes to jail once in a while.
No, they don't. They really don't. And, But my family having those backroom meetings about yours truly come to the conclusion there's nothing we can do. If he doesn't get it, he doesn't get it. And what do? I have the gift of self-knowledge that feels so powerful. I know I'm never going to drink again. And I make the alcoholic declaration, I'm not drinking, so don't try to tempt me. I tell everybody I know that it's over. I tell my family I quit drinking. And what do? I actually stop drinking. And I give my family the worst thing an alcoholic of my type can give them. I give them false hope. Because now they're having those backroom meetings about yours truly, and they're saying, did you hear the good news? Did you hear? Oh my God, he quit drinking. No, no, he didn't go to jail or nothing. It was his idea. No, he's doing great. And what they can't see is they see alcoholism on the outside. They see me start to go to work 5 days a week. They start to see me show up at family events. They start to see my laundry get clean. And what am I saying? I'm the guy in the book. Work better, feel better. Don't miss it at all. But what they can't see is the inside. They can't see the irritable, restless, discontent nature that happens to a guy like me when I just put the plug in the jug. And I've fallen victim to that brainwashing many of us have fallen victim to before we get to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a brainwashing that's so devastating it kills many of us. We are going to have to overcome it if we are going to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And many of us went through it. It goes something like this. They came to me for years and years, people that knew me and wanted nothing but the best for me. They said, you're a great guy. Oh gosh, we love you. You got a lot of potential. You know, you could probably do anything you wanted to do if you just quit drinking. You could probably be anyone you wanted to be if you just quit drinking. All your dreams would come true if you just quit drinking. You'd be so happy if you just quit drinking. And they're telling me that all my problems are due to drinking, you know. And so I take that information and I run it by my story. And I go, let me see. I went to jail. I was drinking. Lost a job. I was drinking. Smacked that guy. I was drinking. Blew up the relationship. I was drinking. Yeah. It makes sense. And I'm brainwashed into the idea that all you have to do is remove alcohol from a guy like me. And everything's going to be great. All my dreams are going to come true. So somebody want to explain this to me? How come every day that goes by since my last drunk, I get more irritable, restless, and discontent. And confused and baffled because I'm convinced because you convinced me that if I just quit drinking, everything's going to be fine. And what I don't understand is I've lost the power of choice in drink. And I love that. I love that in the doctor's opinion. We talk about that. Irritable, restless, and discontent. Wow. That has got to be the greatest understatement in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't it? Because it doesn't sound bad. It sounds almost clinical, doesn't it? I mean, if I showed up at a meeting and my good friend Jerry was there and Jerry rolled up on me and said, Don, how are you tonight? And I said, well, Jerry, this particular evening, I am a tad bit irritable, restless, and discontent, you know. And Jerry might say, oh, that's terrible. Click your heel, say the third step prayer, you'll be fine. And, but that's not how it feels, does it? You know, I'm irritable. I want to hurt you. And...
I'm restless. I think I'll go over there. No, I don't like those people. Maybe over there. What are they up to? Maybe I'll get some ice cream. God, I'm getting fat. You know, I'm like a dog circling his own tail, looking for the right place to lay down. Nope, nope, nope. People watch other restless people. They go, what's with Don? He's restless. I guess so. It's hard to watch. Wherever I am, it's the wrong place. Whatever I'm doing, it's the wrong thing. And whoever I'm doing it with, it's the wrong people. I can't get any comfort. I can never relax and just be in my own skin. I'm restless. And I'm discontent. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you had asked me what kills alcoholics, I'd have said car crashes and whiskey. And today I say discontent. We underestimate it. We say things to each other like, feelings don't matter. Really? Everybody got up in this morning and their whole day was directed by their feelings, whether they want to admit it or not. Now, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn to ignore our feelings, in order to ignore our thinking, so we can buy enough time to get to the spiritual solution. But left unchecked, you know, nobody ever went to jail for thinking about robbing a bank, but everybody thought about robbing a bank before they did it. So we underestimate the power of our thought life here in Alcoholics Anonymous, which really is what steps 10 and 11 is all about. But I didn't understand that when I get here, so I don't understand discontent. And discontent sounds a little bit like happy, unhappy, doesn't it? Well, I'm happy. I'll tell you, I can live with happy and unhappy, right? Happy and unhappy seem to be influenced by things outside of me. You know what I mean? The weather, the economy, how much money I got in my pocket, how's my boss's mood that day, how's my wife doing? Things outside of me. Happier, I can live with that. That's life on life's terms. But discontent or contentment are very, very different because they're located inside you. And curiously enough, it seems to be that discontent nature cannot be comforted by things outside of ourselves. You know what alcoholics like? We like it when things are wrong. We like it when we got something to point to. You know what I mean? When something's wrong in our life and we can stop and go, oh, I got a bad medical diagnosis. That's why I'm screwed up. Oh, I lost my job. That's why I'm screwed up. She left. He left. She came back. He came back. Whatever it is. Something that we can point to explain our discontent nature. You know what we hate? When there's nothing wrong, but we feel like something's wrong. You know, we made that list in our mind. I did. I don't know if you did, but I had that list in my mind, you know, when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all the trouble I'm in. You know, I'm hopelessly in debt. I got warrants for my arrest in 2 counties. I haven't worked in a year. Haven't had a valid driver's license in 10 years. I'm an alcoholic / loser, right? And I'm sitting new in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, listening to these amazing stories of resurrection. And I'm thinking to myself, what if that happened for me? What if that happened for a guy like me? What if I got out of all that trouble? Oh, I'm so sure. I'm so sure that at the bottom of the list there's a line that says equals content. I'd be so content. And what do? I go to work on those things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm staying sober. I'm working steps. I get through the amends process, but I'm using it as a resurrection process. I'm not doing it to repair the damage between me and them. I'm doing the consequence amends. And I'm paying back the money, and I'm getting out of trouble, and I show up in those courtrooms, you know what I mean? And I show up, and I get that taken off the list. And I pay back the money, I get that taken off the list. And boy, in short order, you know, faster than I thought it would ever happen, I'm out of trouble. You get down to the bottom, it says equals content, and you know what? I'm not content. And I don't know what's wrong. And I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous every day, but there seems to be something missing inside me. I mean, it's good, but it's not great. And I was so sure if I wasn't in that trouble because I was convinced that that was why I was discontent. It was the trouble in my life. It was the wreckage of my past. That's why I'm discontent. So if that's taken care of, I'll be content, but I'm not content. And then I've got that other list in my mind. You know, I hear guys talk about things in Alcoholics Anonymous I couldn't even imagine, you know, because there's a bunch of show-offs in AA. You know what I mean? When you're new, the room's full of show-offs. They got stuff I can't imagine ever having. Like, I don't know, like a valid driver's license. You know what I mean? But I think to myself, I hear about a guy that had a career, and I go, what would that be like to have a career? Something you could be proud of. Go to work every day. Make a living. What would that look like? And a guy that talked about falling in love with the woman of his dreams and the successful sober marriage in AA. What would that be like to have that happen? And a guy that did the work and paid back the money and really put his nose to the grindstone and bought himself a house, became a homeowner, a citizen, and votes in elections. And what would that be like? And without knowing I do it, almost without my permission, I go to work on those things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I start crossing them off the list, you know? And
and I get a career and I start making good money and I meet the woman of my dreams and we get sober and we got a sober household and I become a homeowner and I'm a registered voter and I do all those things that the world out there tells me if I do, I'll be satisfied. And I get to the bottom of the list and there's a line that says equals content, and I'm not content, and I'm 4 and I'm 5 years sober. And it's good, but it's not great. There's something missing from the equation. And I begin to understand that this thing called alcoholism is so much more powerful, so much more destructive than just putting whiskey in my mouth. That this thing will kill me dead and take whatever experience, ability I have to experience joy out of me in a sober state. We try to figure out why people leave Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a great question. Why would you go back to the grinder, the guillotine, the machete that was so distasteful, so destructive, so painful, it drove you into a place like Alcoholics Anonymous? And a short time later, or sometimes many years later, we go back to the very grinder that destroyed our life. And we can't figure it out. So we try to assign blame to it. Well, you know, he wasn't going to a lot of meetings. No, actually, he was going to meetings. Well, he probably wasn't going to the right meetings. You know, and we try. Well, he probably didn't have a sponsor. No, he had a sponsor. Didn't have the right sponsor, obviously, you know. And we try to explain it. And why do we want to explain it? It scares the heck out of us. Because when one of us makes it, we're all a little stronger. And one of us goes back to the grinder, we're all a little bit weaker. But I know why people go out today. I know why. It's so simple, like anything else in dealing with alcoholism and recovery. We complicate it. But it's simple. Bill wrote about it in the big book. In the chapter of Vision for You, the very last paragraph on the first page explains it perfectly for a guy like me. It says a heavy drinker being dry at the moment says, don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we laugh at such a sally. We know our man is fooling himself. He's like a scared little boy, whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. Oh, he'll try the old game again because he's presently not happy with his sobriety. I got to tell you, if you're not happy with your sobriety, the clock's ticking. You can only stay in Alcoholics Anonymous for so long if you don't come vibrant in here. If this doesn't become the most important thing in your life, if you're not fired up about being sober and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's difficult to stay in AA. And that's the environment we have to create in our home groups and our sponsorship lines with the people we work with, is what a gift this is, what a blessing this is. Because if we can't be content here with our sobriety and not realize this is the greatest gift ever given to us, we won't be able to keep it. And we watch people walk away from Alcoholics Anonymous and return the gift. And what a beautiful gift I've been given. You know that everything in my life can be taken from me. My health can be taken from me. My marriage can be taken from me. Money can be taken from me. My job can be taken from me. Everything can be taken. You know what can't be taken from me? My sobriety. Because it's God-given and nobody has the right to take it away because nobody else gave it to me. God gave it to me. What a beautiful fact for us that nobody can take this gift away from us. We will have to return it. We will have to relinquish it. And I don't know about you. I love my gift. I love my gift of sobriety. And I'm hanging in here tough. I don't want to give it up. I want to be with you. I want to stay in the middle of the herd. I don't want to ever go back to what I have. But I understand the terms of engagement with my alcoholism. I'd love to tell you, because I haven't had a drink in 25 years, that I have some type of insulation, some type of recovery that makes me immune to what other people go through. I'm just saying, I tell you what, I love irritable, restless, and discontent. Because when you're reading a book study and you're sitting there with 25 years or 20 years or 15 years or 5 years, you read it and you're going, yeah, I remember when I was new. New? Really? Because I got to tell you, all I got to do is stop living by the spiritual principles, walk away from prayer and meditation, get off, you know, in the Donnie land for a little bit. I'll tell you what, irritable, restless, and discontent is available to me today. And you would think you'd have some kind of credit built up. You know, I've gone to a lot of AA for a long time. You know, I've helped a lot of people. I can probably take some bad action for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months easy. And then we're shocked how quickly we get crazy. And we forget the terms of engagement in Alcoholics Anonymous. We forget the terms of engagement with the disease called alcoholism. Because when I get nuts, when I get irritable, restless, and discontent, when I run on self-will, guess what? I never know it. No, it never feels like there's something wrong with me. I just think it's bad luck. Wherever I go, there seem to be like really annoying people. And I don't know what the hell's wrong with my wife, but I hope she gets some help soon because she's got a problem. And I can't believe I work for that company because they really don't appreciate me. And it goes on and on and on. I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, but I usually don't think so. We read the big book like that applies to new people. We read the big book like that applies to drunken people. It applies to alcoholic people. It applies to me. That these things happen to me without my permission and I don't know it. So what do I do about it? I got a sponsor. My sponsor called me up about 2 weeks ago. He goes, "What's up with you?" I did not know what he meant. But trying to hide my defensiveness, I said, "Not much. What's up with you?" I'll bore you with all the minutia that goes to the story, but I'll cut to the chase. Turned out it was me. Again. I mean, I've been discontent 1,000 times in sobriety, and so far the record is this, 1,000-0. 1,000 times it's been me. You would think after finding out through step work and sponsorship and what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, if when you get discontent, you find out 1,000 times in a row that it's you, the next time it happens, you'll go, "I've been through this, I know it's me." No, never, never. Why is that? Why is that I have an internal disturbance that's located 3 inches behind my belly button? It's inside. It's obvious. It's inside. But where do I look for the problem? Outside. Like I'm spring-loaded out there. I hurt. What's wrong out here? And what do I look at? The areas I'm closest to. Right? Marriage, business, AA home group, guys I sponsor. You know, they don't appreciate me. You know, it's just outside of myself. This is what we're dealing with here in alcoholism. That I have to work some type of program, not to just stay physically sober. I could do that if I want, but I don't want it. Bill Wilson said, "The good is the enemy of the best." I want the best. I want to go full class. I want to have joy in my life. I understand the progression of alcoholism, you know? When I'm new, you tell me it's a progressive disease. I don't have to talk to anybody. I know what that means. You know, I'm a smart guy. I'm so smart, I'm usually wrong. You know what I mean? But I don't ask for help. I just figure it out in my head. Progression. I drink more often. No, that's not progression. Some of us drank very little before we got here. Some of us drank tankards. It's not about what we drink, when we drink, how much we drink. It's about what it does to us and the inability to stop, the inability to leave it alone, the inability not to take a next one after we started. But I don't know that about progression. And progression that we don't talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous but makes perfect sense to me is when I started drinking, I had a full life. Oh my God, I was a graduating class athlete. I got great grades, scholarship offers, dated up a storm. I'm a guy I wanted to be like. I'm a guy I wanted to be with. I love life. And alcohol seemed to be an additive to an already full life. I love the effect produced by alcohol. It's relief. What's the effect? Relief. From what swirls around in my head, the sober state, that anxiety, that how do I fit in, how does this work, do you love me, do I love you, that wall. It's been between me and the rest of the world. It goes down with a couple of drinks, doesn't it? It goes down. I can feel you, I'm closer to you. My fear leaves me. I love the effect produced by alcohol. It's magic in a bottle. I don't know I'm alcoholic. I'm drinking to fit in, I'm drinking to feel better. I love the effect produced by alcohol. But I don't really understand any of that. But in the beginning, it's an additive. I can take it or leave it. I like it. It's not problematic. And I had an ability, it seemed, at that time to somehow enjoy life sober. I didn't have to be drunk all the time. I go out and play ball with my friends, play league ball, do this. Man, have a great time. Go to the beach, go surfing, have a great time. Go over and help somebody with something. You know, feel good because I helped my fellow man out. Have a great time, sober. But I'm partying too. And as the years go by and the progression of alcoholism unfurls, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I had? I had a complete and utter inability to experience joy in a sober state. How destructive is that? And how well does that explain when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous with an intellectual list of the things that you know will make you happy and then those things come true in your life and yet you can't feel them? Where there's nothing wrong but you feel like something's wrong.
And that's untreated alcoholism in a sober state. What alcoholism did for me, it started as an additive and it took everything out of my life. And the main thing it took is that ability to enjoy life sober. And it's important if you're new here tonight that you understand that, because you might be 30, 60, 90 days sober. And you might be listening to me going, what is this guy on about? Pay attention. Because I'm telling you, we know who you are. And we know a great deal about you. And I know that's offensive. It was offensive to me when some guy with 25 years goes, I've been right where you have. No, you haven't. But I'm telling you, if you're in your first 30 days, we know a great deal about you. For instance, this hasn't been a good year. And you might be going to meetings. If you're like me and you're new, you're probably going to a meeting a day. You might be going to two meetings a day. You might be really sick like me and going to three meetings a day. And you might be setting up and cleaning up and talking to your sponsor every day and doing your little readings and praying on your knees at night. And you just can't figure out why you want to kill yourself. And you might feel terrible. You might feel irritable, restless, and discontent. And you might be sober like I was a really, 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 really long time. Like way too long to feel that way. Like, I don't know, like 47 days. You know what I mean? Hey man, don't laugh. Go back. Get in your time machine for a minute. And remember 47 days. Sitting there in the morning going, I can't believe I haven't drank in 47 days. That ain't a month and a half. That's a lifetime for an alcoholic. And that feels like an investment. And you go into AA every day and you're not feeling better at 47 days. Some of our older members better tell our newer members, you're not doing anything wrong. You just haven't been here long enough to do enough right. But you're on the path. And you're not drinking and you're not doing any of that other crap, but you still got alcoholism. Your alcoholism wants you back. You got off of the train. You left the station. But if you think the train pulled out, it didn't. It's waiting for you. Because it waited for me. Oh, he got off, but he'll be back. He always gets back. We'll be right here waiting for you, Don. That train's still waiting at the station for me to come back. But it'll never live. It's always there for me. And we got to let our new friends know that, yeah, you've made a good decision. You made a good turn. And now you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you're irritable, restless, and discontent. Welcome to sobriety. Welcome to early recovery. There's a certain amount of pain that you're going to incur to get to the other side. But you're not doing anything wrong. We need to let you know you're not doing anything wrong. And I'm going to give you a word if you're new and you feel the way that I felt when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you've been brainwashed into believing that all you have to do is get physically sober and you'll be okay. And you can't figure out why you want to kill yourself or hurt somebody. I'll give you this word. Take it in your pocket. Pull it out when you need it. And the word is temporary. Because your disease is a liar, if nothing else. And your disease will lie to you in your own voice, in your own head. And the biggest disease my ever lied to me in my head was the simple fact, it would say this over and over again, you're always going to feel this way. You're always going to feel this way. And let me tell you, if the pain of early sobriety, if I was always going to feel that way, I wouldn't have been able to stay here. There's a room full of people, look around. We didn't have to stay that way. It was temporary. Our disease lied to us and said we'd always feel that way. But we walked through that pain. We did that step work. We had the psychic change. And now we're living large and free in Alcoholics Anonymous. We got free. Isn't that something? You go from being a slave to King Alcohol to you're free. I'm a free man. I can go anywhere in the world that free men go. Do anything that free men do. What a gift I've been given. And I didn't believe it would happen for me. And if you're new and you're sitting there and go, I don't think it's going to happen for me, that's okay. Show up tomorrow. And if you don't think it's going to happen for you, that's okay. Hit your knees tonight. And if you don't believe in God, then pray to me. Pray to anybody but yourself. You want to know what my early prayer sounded like? I'm going to tell you the truth. I get on my knees and go, Dear God, it's Don. I know you're not there, but if you were, I'm doing this because I have a maniac in my life called a sponsor. And he will ask me if I did this tomorrow when he sees me. And he told me if I lie, I'll get drunk. So I have to do it, because if I don't, I'll have to lie and tell him I did it. And then I'll drink and I'll die and it won't matter. Thanks for keeping me sober. Crazy. God's up there going, oh, we got a live one here.
I wondered when he'd be back. Welcome home, son. You know. Because God's been waiting for me. God's been waiting for us a long time. Got to AA, I was 31 years old, man. I left God when I was probably 12 years old. I wonder how bad that hurt my Heavenly Father to watch the way that I ran through the world and hurt the people that I hurt and live like a maniac. But my Heavenly Father looking up there going, you don't have to live this way, kid. You don't have to hurt like this. Just come home. But I didn't know how to get home because I'm an alcoholic. And a lot of the ways that people get back to God won't work for a guy like me because of my ego and my self-centeredness and the things that... But a beautiful program like Alcoholics Anonymous packaged it in a way that I could understand it and led me back to God. See, I thought you were going to teach me how not to drink. I didn't understand that what you were going to teach me is how to have a relationship with a power greater than myself, live a spiritual way of life. I didn't know that a side effect of living a spiritual way of life and having a relationship with God was you don't have to drink anymore. I thought AA was about not drinking. I found out it's not. It's about having a relationship with God and a spiritual way of life. And there's all these side effects. The biggest one for me, because it was killing me, is I don't have to drink anymore. But you know what? I don't have to be a maniac anymore. I don't have to scream at people anymore. I don't have to be a jerk in traffic anymore. I don't have to be a cheater or a liar or a thief anymore. There's all kinds of great side effects to a spiritual way of life I never saw coming. And I'd miss the whole thing because I love the effect produced by alcohol. I love drinking. And when I came to AA, I mean, you know, I'm not a guy. I can't take credit for any of this. I'm a product, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm an example that AA works. And more importantly, I'm an example that AA works when you don't believe in it. And it's so important to me that if you're new and you're out there and you're like, that's great, man. I'm glad you got this great life. I'm glad it worked for you. It's not going to work for me in a million years. Oh, my God, you're perfect for AA. You're perfect. You're the guy I'm betting on. Because the guy that comes in and he's 30 days sober, and he's like, I'm home. I love AA. Have you met my sponsor? Terrific guy. Oh, look at the steps. A searching and fearless moral inventory. When do we do that? That'll be terrific. I hate to say it, man, because I'm sure I'm the only judgmental person in AA. I start waving goodbye to that guy in my head, you know. And they're never going to make it. Nah, I like the guy in the back, man. Sunglasses at night, ball cap pulled down, arms folded, you know, flexing. Just can't stop flexing, you know, and flexing. Rocking back and forth so he doesn't explode from the inside out. I like those new guys. You walk up to a man, you know, how's it going, buddy? Good, good. Any better, I'd go on a shooting spree. Sobriety, what a gift, you know. And they're angry and they don't want to be here. And they're like, ah. Because you took away their comfort. They've got to blame somebody, you know. That was me, man. I blamed AA. You know, I come to you for help and then I'm mad that you won't let me drink. It's like crazy. But AA works. And AA doesn't work because of us. Sometimes you hear people say, and I did this and I did my work and I did. AA doesn't work because of us. It works in spite of us. You know how messed up we are? Oh my God, if we had anything to do with the solution, we'd have screwed it up 80 years ago. I mean, God just sits there and watches Alcoholics and Alcoholics Anonymous and just shakes his head and goes, stop helping me, Jesus. I mean, I understand my nature, my relationship with God today. You know, God's management, and I'm labor. You know, when I was helping God, there were problems all the time. You know, my job isn't to help God with anything. He doesn't need my help. My job is to let God do what He does and for me to do what He needs me to do, which is serve Him and His kids and the conversation. When I do that, my life goes really well. When I think He needs my help, my input, my observation, things don't go so well in my life. Now, what does that look like? I mean, do I actually get in my knees in prayer and go, God, I just wanted you to know? No, of course not. What it looks like in my life is this. There's something going on in my life, and I look at it, and I go, it shouldn't be that way. This shouldn't be happening. You shouldn't be acting that way. You shouldn't be driving that way. You shouldn't be talking. It's called judgment. You know, I used to go to my sponsor when I was new because I had 1,000 judgments, and I'd tell them about my judgments and my resentments because I had new ones every day. You know when you're new, you're going to kill somebody different every day because everything offends you. And my sponsor would listen to me patiently, and he'd just smile, and he'd go, well, Don, that all may be true. There's plenty of work to be done at home. And he'd walk away. plenty of work to be done at home. And I finally grabbed, what the hell does that mean, plenty of work? Because I think home, like physically, like the house. And I'm so slow, you go, no, dummy. You know, there's so much wrong with you. How do you even have the luxury or time of judging others? I mean, do you know where you're at? Do you know that you're a new and Alcoholics Anonymous standing in your wardrobe with your feet on fire? Do you get that you burned your life to the ground? You might want to pay attention to your side of the street. Oh, I don't want to do that, though, because it's painful. There's some kind of sick ego-based relief I get when I'm judging you and I don't have to deal with me. I just, you know, in a sick way, it just makes me feel better. Like what's wrong with me, what's wrong in my life really doesn't exist for maybe those few moments that I'm judging you. But nothing changes. I finished my drinking, like all tough guys finish their drinking, living with family. Here guys go, yeah, I hit my bottom on mom's couch. And I'm like, I didn't hit my bottom on mom's couch. It was my sister. Like, that's better. And I'm in Simi Valley, California, and I'm living to die. And I'm living unemployment check to unemployment check, and all my money goes for alcohol. And when I don't have money for alcohol, I steal. It's that simple. And I'll do whatever I have to do to get drunk every day. I'll steal from the neighbors. I'll steal from my sister's slender purse. I'll steal from the supermarket. I'll go do drunken shopping. If you don't know what that is, I'll tell you. You go out and you get a cart. And don't go to the liquor section because that's obvious, right? So go there, get about half the cart filled, and really get into it. I mean, look, like, read some labels. Oh, that's interesting. I would have thought there was gluten in this, you know, and put it in your thing. And then swing by the liquor department and get a fifth and put that in your basket and just keep rolling along. And every time you get to an aisle and there's not a lot of people in it, just throw it down. And you can do that about 20, 25 minutes. You get through most of the fifth, and then you just leave the basket and try to make it to the door. It's like a game show. In case you haven't figured this out, that ain't social drinking. Just saying. So I'm doing what I have to do to get drunk every day. And a few days before I got sober, I got an unemployment check from the state of California, went up to my brother-in-law, Larry, asked to borrow his car because losers like me don't have cars. Said, Larry, got my check. Can I borrow your car? I want to go cash it. He asked me a weird question. He said, Don, will you be coming back this time? Because I had borrowed this car a few times that summer and gone out on alcoholic vacations. We all know what that is. And the 12 and 12 tells me my outstanding characteristic is defiance. So when Larry said that to me, I got right in his face. I said, Larry, how dare you? You know, Larry, the last time this happened, I apologized. I mean, I opened my heart to you, Larry. I don't really need this crap. And Larry, untreated Al-Anon that he was, felt terrible and took the keys out. I snatched the keys from this man that I'm mooching a room off of to walk out of his house to get in his car, and I remember thinking, there better be gas in it. You know, just I go down to the liquor store to cash my check, because that's where drunks like me cash their unemployment checks. And while I'm standing in line, I have what the big book refers to as the thought that precedes the first drink. And for me, that thought always sounds like this: what's in a half pint? Nobody ever got in trouble drinking a half pint. So I cash the check, I get a half pint, I drink that in the parking lot. Went so well, I decide to have another half pint. And then I think, you know what, I can go visit those friends in the valley. I'll be gone like 40 minutes. They won't even miss me, and I'm gone. 3 days later, I'm driving up the hill to face the family that I've done over one more time. Once again, I've taken their hope, their faith, and their trust, and I've torn it to shreds. And you need to understand this, driving up the hill to face my family, I'd done over one more time, I love them no less than I love them at this very moment. And I love my family tremendously. But I can't serve two masters, I only got time to serve one, that's King Alcohol. And you get between me and a drink, nothing personal, I'm getting to the drink. Around you, through you, manipulating you, I'm getting to the drink. But keep in mind, I don't know what alcoholism is. I don't know what I suffer from. So I can't explain that to you. I can't warn you. I can't say, listen, I didn't mean for this to happen, but it's going to happen again. Because I'm not in charge. I'm a puppet at the end of a string. I'm not calling the shots. I feel like I'm possessed. You need to get away from me. Save yourself. I can't warn the people that love me. Because I love them, and I don't know why it's happening either, so I say things like, I'm sorry. What else can you say? I didn't mean for it to happen. Can you give me another chance? And it got hard for my family to give me those second and those third and those 30th chances when I'm roaring through their life year after year after year. And we're all getting sick together in this family disease called alcoholism, and we're all lost. And I'm so self-obsessed, and I'm in so pain, so much pain for what my alcoholism is doing for me, I don't have the time to consider what it's doing to anybody else. I walk into that house that's been devastated by the disease of alcoholism to find out why I was gone. That argument broke out between my brother-in-law and my sister. He wanted to report the car stolen, and she talked him down, negotiated him down to a missing persons report. And when they saw me show up, they called the cops. Now they're on their way up to do the follow-up work. I got warrants for my arrest in 2 counties, so I start screaming at my sister, "You called the cops and you know I got warrants? I'm going to jail. Thanks for nothing," because now it's her fault. And I go outside to wait for the police because I don't want the interview to go on in front of the family. I don't know what I'm going to be saying, but I'm fairly certain I'll be lying. You know what I mean? So as I'm outside, here comes the black and white up the street, and on the side of the black and white it says, "Canine Unit." And I think to myself, oh good, they brought the dog. Like I'm in any shape to make a run for it. And the cop got out and he started asking me those hard, tough questions that trained professionals are taught to ask, like, where were you? And everything I remember is illegal, so I'm making up a story. And he starts looking at my eyes really hard because they're like Chinese roadmaps are kind of rolling up in my head. And I see him lock my gaze, so I break his gaze. And then he goes over and he locks me again. So now we're dancing and interviewing in front of the house. And I don't feel good. Now, I'm not going to kid you. I do not feel good. My hands are wet. And I just wanted to divert his attention. And I saw the dog in the back seat. And I said, "Oh, is that your partner?" And he says, "Well, yes, it is." And he goes over and opens the door. And this dog gets out. German Shepherd. Not a hair out of place. Like a Rin Tin Tin reincarnate. And with zero prompting on my part, he started to relay facts to me about the dog's life. Dog's past mandatory retirement. Can't retire him. He's just too good. The dog has participated in more arrests than any dog in the history of Ventura County. The dog has participated in more arrests and rescues than any dog in the history of Ventura or Los Angeles County. This dog was so phenomenal that the officers took a collection out of pocket to send him over to Europe for international competition, where he kicked butt on German Shepherds, right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm looking at this dog, and I said the truth. I go, "It's a phenomenal dog you have there, sir." And this thought flew in the back of my mind, the kind of thought the minute you think it, you know it's true. You want to deny it, but you know it's true. And what the truth was is this dog had done significantly more with his life than I had done with mine. God, I hated that dog. I walk back into a house that's been devastated by the disease of alcoholism. They want me gone. I do what I do, which is beg for another chance. I turn on the waterworks. I beg. I got nowhere to go. I'm so sick. I'll die. You don't understand what it's like out there. And there's people looking for me. And I'm in a lot of trouble. If you send me away, I'll die. I'll go to AA and everything. No idea why I said that part. And it's not like my family believed I was going to go to AA. My first couple nights in AA, my sister drove me to AA and picked me up from AA. You know how it makes you feel when you look the way I look and you get in your older sister's compact car at the end of an evening of Alcoholics Anonymous and driving you back to her place, her 31-year-old loser brother. "So, Donald, what'd you learn in AA tonight?" I don't remember my first night in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I remember my second night in Alcoholics Anonymous because the most important thing happened to me, and it's happened to me in 25 years of sobriety. Something occurred to me in that meeting that if it had not taken place, you'd have another speaker tonight. I'm at the Simi Valley Alano Club. I attended the 6 o'clock meeting, 6 to 7:30. From 7:30 to 8, there's a break, and then the 8 o'clock meeting was going to start. I'm coming up on 48 hours without a drink, and I'm coming apart at the seams. I'm wearing my sunglasses at night. I got my tough guy coat on. I got my back against the wall. I got my arms folded across my chest. I'm rocking back and forth to keep them exploding from the inside out. And every molecule in my body is telling me to go get a drink. Every thought I have is about get a drink. It's about the pain I have for the detox I'm going through, the facts of my life, how horrible my life is, what I've done to myself, the hopeless debt, the fact I haven't worked in a year. I've taken every good thing that's ever happened in my life and I've torn it to shreds. And that's all I can think about coming up on 48 hours without a drink. And I'm looking at the good members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're staying away from me, and they had every right to stay away from me because I am dangerous. And I'm dangerous because I'm terrified. And anybody terrified is dangerous. And those good members of the Simi Valley Alano Club are tiptoeing around me, and I'm just daring you to come talk to me. You know what I mean? I got that look on my face like, you do not want to talk to me. And I caught a break. Because it's the most important moment in my life. Whether I live or die is going to be decided in the next few minutes. If I leave that clubhouse and I go take a drink, I'll never make it back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm convinced of that. I lose my place to live. I lose my dignity. I live whatever chance I have at a new life. It's gone out the window and I drink and I die. And although it's seconds and inches for me, my fate will be decided in the next few minutes. Over in the corner are two card-carrying members of Alcoholics Anonymous named Lou and Mark. And like I said, it's the most important moment of my life. But for Lou and Mark, it was Tuesday. And Mark and Lou were where they were every Tuesday between the 6 o'clock and the 8 o'clock meeting in the Simi Valley Alano Club. They were drinking coffee, and they had their eyes trained on the door, and they had their eyes trained on the room. And they were looking for men to 12-step. And I understood that modern 12-step work is done in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That, yeah, we still visit the hospitals and the jails and the institutions, but it's not the way it used to be. Because of the modern era of Alcoholics Anonymous, because we have so many people that go to treatment, there's so many detoxes, and none of that existed back in the day, that a lot of people are funneled to Alcoholics Anonymous. Our new friends are funneled to Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have to keep in mind that our 12-step work is done in the rooms, a lot of it. And Mark and Lou knew that. And they looked at me, and the way they tell the story goes something like this. They saw me, and Lou looked at Mark and went, "Whoa." And Mark looked at Lou and went, "Yeah." And Lou said, "I bet we can't get him sober." And Mark said, "Well, we are here." And they did something to me that I think is the most important thing that happens in an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's more important than what the format is, more important than who's speaking, more important than what the coffee is, where the meeting's held. All those things are important, but it's the most important thing that happens in an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Two card-carrying members of AA took a 30-foot journey across the clubhouse to cordially welcome a man to Alcoholics Anonymous who was dying from the disease of alcoholism. It's the most important thing that can happen in AA. And why is it so important? You expect me to make that journey to Mark and Lou? I can't make it. It's a million miles. Don't you know where I've been, what I've done, who I've hurt? Don't you understand I can't get my eyes off of my shoes and you expect me to go shake hands? I don't have the strength. I don't have the ability. I don't have anything left in the tank. I am broken and dying. And Mark and Lou understood that. They understood they'd have to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffered. All that was required of me was to accept it. And they grabbed me. They do what we do in AA. They got me a half a cup of coffee. They said, "Hi, I'm Lou. This is Mark. I don't think we've met you. Why don't you come sit with us?" And they sat me down on the table, and Mark sat down with me, and Lou continued to stand. Lou clapped me on the back and said, "Don, this is Mark. He'll be your sponsor." And he walked away. And they assigned me my first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that's not done everywhere, but in my case, probably a good idea. Because we say things in AA to our new friends, we've been saying them forever. They said them to us, we say it to them, we don't even think about it anymore. Every meeting I attend, in the format, we talk about sponsorship. Get a sponsor, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. And what my favorite thing that we say to new people, find somebody that has what you want. Huh. I wonder what I want my second night of recovery. Oh, I don't know. Maybe a pharmaceutical salesman with a spare Cadillac, you know what I mean? Because I'd have never picked the weenie boy they assigned to me because he's everything I'm not. You know, he's clean cut, he's bald of head, wire-rimmed glasses, soft-spoken. And you know what? That memo, that thing that goes around Alcoholics Anonymous, "Oh, I don't talk to the new person about God till they get their feet underneath them," he didn't get that memo. Because our first meeting, he was talking to me about God. What God did for him, what God did for her, what God did for them, what God was going to do for me, and he was expecting a miracle. And he had that spiritual enthusiasm. That spiritual enthusiasm that can't be defeated. And he got out a meeting directory. And without my permission, I might add, he started to circle meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'd be attending. How do I know that? He said, "These are the meetings you'll be attending in Alcoholics Anonymous." And I remember thinking, that's a lot of circling. And he's telling me about AA and how AA works and how lucky I am. How lucky I am. I'm at the low point of my existence and this guy's telling me I'm one of the lucky ones. They're out there in the streets tonight, Don, and they're dying, but you made it to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're in here with us, safe. You're going to be okay, kid. It's going to be great. And although I had no intellectual information to believe that, everything in my life, I mean, my whole scorecard for the last 15 years had been like, crap, 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 a lot of crap, more crap, crap, crap. You know, I believed him. Why is that? The big book describes it perfectly. It says a man who has found this solution, who's properly armed with facts about himself, can genuinely win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a couple hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. And when this guy talked to me about his drinking, I knew he knew about the drinking game. When he talked to me about how his life changed and how God and AA were the reason it happened, I believed him. He wasn't trying to sell me something. He was trying to share a new way of living with me. He seemed to genuinely care about me, and I just met the guy. But I'll tell you what, when somebody really wants to help somebody, that comes through their eyes, it comes through their heart, it comes through their feeling. You can try to deny it. I don't care how broken you are. You know the person in front of you has a real answer and they're trying to help you, and I was intrigued. And he circled all these meetings I've been going to, and then he stopped talking about aid. He said, are you working? I said, well, I'm currently unemployed. More circling, more circling, more circling. He got me a big book, 12 and 12, the meeting directory, and then he insulted me. He insulted me. He had just met me. But if you're going to sponsor people, try to insult them as soon as possible. Get off on the right foot. It's going to happen anyway. You can't help but insult newcomers. You can be as nice as you can be. Go up to a newcomer. How you doing tonight?
Well, that's a personal question, don't you think? You know, is it?
He asked me, can you go home tonight and not drink?
That's pretty rude. This is my second day of recovery, for God's sakes. So I got upset with him. I kind of snapped back at him. I go, listen, buddy, any idiot can go a day without drinking. And he lit up like Christmas. He goes, oh, you're going to be perfect for our program. I mean, that should be one of our slogans, you know, first things first, easy does it. You know, any idiot can go a day without drinking, you know. Because some days it comes down to that. We all know that, you know. Just remember, I just don't have to. Some days, you know, they're great. Most of my days are wonderful. And some days, you know, you get through them. You pray for midnight. Come on, midnight. You know, you just try to get through the day. Nobody ever promised me that my life would be void of that stuff. But I got a sponsor. I don't even know how valuable it is. I don't even know what he is. Just some guy. Some well-meaning guy. How does this work? It's bizarre. Starts giving me direction right away. Go home and don't drink. Check, I got that. Go home tonight and pray. What? Wait, whoa? Yeah, we pray in Alcoholics Anonymous. No big deal. You know, he downsells it. No big deal. It's just what we do. You say that about everything he asked me to do. That's just what we do. You want me to go to court and face those warrants? That's just what we do. You want me to pay back the IRS $80,000? Just what we do, you know? You want me to go pick up that newcomer two counties over? Just what we do. You know, just like. I know the day why he said that. He didn't have to do it. He didn't have to go to court. He didn't have to pay back the money. We don't care. We don't care what your trouble is. You don't care what your trouble is. You know, you come in here all unique. I got trouble. Oh, you're really shocking. You know, we never heard that before. Everybody thinks they're unique when they're new in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have things in common. It's all the same. People come in. Well, I got to let you know, I'm really not a people person. Really? Never heard that before. I think it's important you understand I have a problem with authority. Shocking, you know. We don't care what your trouble is. We'll put it to service in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I felt so bad I owed the IRS 80 grand. The minute my sponsor found out about that, he put it into service in Alcoholics Anonymous. For seemingly the next 2 or 3 years, so I paid it off. Whenever some newcomer had the audacity of complaining about his little $1,500 IRS debt, be whining to my sponsor. My sponsor would go, hold that thought, Jimmy. Hey, Don. And I'd walk over, he goes, Don, tell Jimmy how much you owe the IRS. And I go, I owe the IRS $80,000. And Jimmy would go, Jesus. And I'd say, just want to be of service. care. We don't care. I'm a meat potatoes AA guy. How did I get sober? I got sober going to AA every night. Every night. Had a commitment at every meeting I went to. Why? My sponsor told me I'm a taker if I don't have a commitment at every meeting I go to. He goes, there's no AA fairies. There's no pixie dust. What do you think, we got a cleaning crew that comes in here slick? No, we're self-supporting through our own contributions. You don't get to go to AA, put $2 in the basket, and think you've contributed. That's the easy part. You will have a commitment at every meeting you attend. It's 25 years ago, I have a commitment at every meeting I attend. Never not had that. Made sense to me. Doesn't it make sense? If you're going to go, we're self-supporting, we should all pitch in. Everybody do a little bit, then nobody has to work too hard. And that stuff where, you know, 10% of the people do 90% of the work. Not in good AA. Not in good AA. Man, I got a great home group. I'll tell you about my home group. It's a men's group. We average about 60 guys every Wednesday night. SOS Men's Group. Meet on 14th Street in the Fairhaven District of Bellingham, Washington. You know where Bellingham is? We're 100 miles north of Seattle, 20 miles south of the Canadian border. America's first defense against Canada. Right? That's who we are. And we got all these young guys, man, getting sober, sponsoring each other, charging hard in Alcoholics Anonymous. 60 guys every Wednesday night. You know what I can tell you the best thing about my group? Once a month, we have a business meeting. You know what we average in attendance? 50. 50 guys think enough about that group and their sobriety that when the meeting's over, they stay for an hour and 15-minute business meeting once a month. And nobody makes them do it because we don't make anybody do nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have spiritual enthusiasm. They announce it's business meeting night, people applaud. I've been to other groups, people go, it's like, oh my God. Boy, your sobriety's so attractive. You know. We're having fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. Ain't fun, I can't stay here. You know, I went to the bar, it was fun. What do you think you were doing trying to drink all that stuff? It's hard to explain to people. I was trying to have fun. Trying to make myself feel better. So I did all that crap, right? So I'd explain that. Doctor, this one doctor was stitching me up. Same doctor, same ER room, 3 days apart. Different part of my head. The only thing that had changed. He's stitching me up. And he's asking me what happened. And I'm giving him the facts, but if I told him the truth, I was saying, well, he's trying to make myself feel better and kind of overshot the mark. You know, that's what we do in AA. We keep it vibrant and exciting in our home group to keep it exciting, man. So I'm an AA guy. I got sober going to meetings. I got sober doing what my sponsor told me to do. I got sober working the steps. Got sober paying the money back. Did I want to do it? I didn't want to do none of it. I don't want to do none of it. We're going to court. Why? They don't even know where I'm at. I don't want to do none of it. Do community service, the Salvation Army. I did so much community service. When I was done, they threw me a party. Didn't want to do any of it. But this is what happened. I got sober. My life started getting better. I couldn't look the world in the eye, and suddenly I got my head up. I got a bounce in my step and a glint in my eye, and I'm looking forward to the future, and I got no reason to be as optimistic as I am, but I'm with you. I'm with this new family, and you're pulling for me. You can do it, kids. You're going to be okay. You're propping me up. You're walking me through the fear. You won't do the work for me, but you'll cheer me through it. I'm going, what's going to happen? We don't know, but we're going to stay and watch, you know? It's like... And I work the steps, and I have the psychic change, and I enter into a relationship with God of my own understanding. I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous through it all. I've sponsored people, and I've been sponsored for 25. I started sponsoring people when I was 6 months sober. I didn't want to do that either. Didn't want to do that. Went on a 12-step call, met a guy. He came back to the clubhouse, asked me to sponsor him. I freaked out. I said, I'll get back to you. Guy was drinking the night before, shows up in AA. I go to my sponsor. I go, that guy, the 12-step call. He goes, yeah. I go, he's here tonight. He goes, that's beautiful. Yeah, he asked me to sponsor him. Oh, that's terrific. What'd you say? Well, I said, I'll get back to him. Let me get this straight. He was drinking last night? Yeah. And somehow he made it to AA tonight? Yeah. And he took whatever strength he had left and asked you for help? Yeah. And you said you'd get back to him? I said, yeah. He goes, go say yes, you selfish bastard. You know, that's AA sponsorship, man. They'd be okay. And I said, my sponsor would always say stuff like that to me and then walk away dismissively. Like he'd say, go say yes. And then he'd walk away, like conversation over. And I'd have to yell at the back of his bald head. A lot of conversations, I get the last word at the back of his bald head. He's walking away, and I go, hey, man, I don't want to kill him. He never stopped walking. He goes, you got to kill a couple before you get the hang of it. And just walked away. AA, we care. No, we don't. And
I love sponsorship. I love both sides of that coin. I love being sponsored, man, because I have all these blank spots. You know what I mean? I can't see myself clearly. Any given moment, I can think I've been doing great. Maybe I'm not. But because of the steps in AA and sponsorship, and particularly my relationship with God and prayer and meditation, my thinking has changed. I don't think the same way that I thought when I got here. I don't process information the same way. I don't have the same reactions to life. Like it says in the spiritual experience, I've experienced a profound alteration in my reaction to life. I'd say about 90% of the time, my thinking, it's right on the money. That other 10%, I don't know which 10% it is. I don't know. Because I don't know about you, all my thinking feels right. All of it. I don't have like 10% of my thinking that holds its hand up and goes, this is the crazy stuff that's going to kill you. No, none of that happens. But I was taught my first 30 days something I do today. I don't make a major decision without running it by my sponsor. And people go, well, I didn't get sober to have somebody else run my life. Good for you. You're better than me. I did. I love sponsorship. I love that asset, being able to run my life by my sponsor who can see me in the third person. Because he sees stuff that I don't see. And he also doesn't see some of the stuff I think is there that ain't. You know, you call your sponsor up and you go, and then she said, and then I said, and then she said, and then, and I think she hates me, and I don't know. Your sponsor's like, what are you talking about? None of that is real. Is not? No, you're in fantasy land again. Oh, thank God, I thought it was real. You know, what a great asset. How wonderful is that? I'll tell you my favorite story about sponsorship. I got really sick when I was like 10 years sober, right? Super sick. Not for a week or a month, for a year, right? Trying different medications, just got worse. And at the end of this, like, I didn't want to be the sick guy in AA, but I'm having a really tough time. And, man, I went to work. They had me on this experimental medication, and all hell broke loose, and I was just in all this pain, and I went to bed, and I'm all curled up, and I'm feeling sorry for myself. You know what I mean? The self-pity's dripping down the walls, and, you know. Just, and I hate it. I hate how sorry I felt for myself. And my phone rings. It's one of my sponsees, and I'm thinking, oh, not now. But I got good training in AA. I'm an AA guy, man. You answer the phone. You pick up the phone. Yeah, man, what's going on? He goes, how you doing, sponsor? Because everyone knows I'm sick. And usually I lie, you know. I give that spiritual brave chin, you know. Well, you know what, I'm not doing great. But with God and AA, I'm going to get through this, you know. For whatever reason, I told the truth that morning, you know what I mean? I said, how am I doing? Let me tell you how I'm doing. I go, I got this new medication, so I go from being so cold I'm wearing a parka to so hot that sweat is literally exploding from my body, and that's in the course of 5 minutes. Punctuated by running dashes to the bathroom, and it's like a game show because I don't know where it's going to come out from. And I'm in pain. I'm in a lot of pain. I'm in so much pain from head to toe, all my joints. I'm cramping in all my muscles. And you know what? I feel sorry for myself. And I'm scared. You know what? I think I'm going to die, and I don't want to die. I like my life. I don't want to die, and I'm afraid. You want to know how I'm doing? That's how I'm doing. Wow. Dead quiet on the other end of the phone. After an appropriate pause, he says, wow, Sponce, I'm really sorry to hear that. Listen, I met this girl. I had to cover the phone. I was laughing so hard. God bless sponsees that get you out of yourself. We sponsor new people because they just don't care about your problems. So great. I'm surrounded by guys that care less if I'm on fire. They might hit me with a fire extinguisher and go, so what do you think I should do? Should I ask her out? You know? They don't care. And it's our job, man. We're the AA members that have been here a while. These old timers, man, I wasn't house trained, you know what I mean? I'm a street guy. I was a menace to society. AA didn't just get me sober. He turned me into a productive member. The old timers took that responsibility on. And he did it with love and tolerance and patience. They didn't beat it into me. They didn't tell me what to do. They invited me into their life. They didn't tell me to do cleanup. They were already doing cleanup. Come clean up with me. Come to the conference with me. Take this commitment with me. They gave me self-esteem. They gave me a feeling of worth because they invited me into their big AA lives, into their homes, their hearts, their cars. They invited me in to do the stuff they were already doing. They didn't tell me what they used to do. They weren't the uses. Well, I used to do this and I used to do that. Maybe you should do it too. They were doing it. And I owe that. I owe that to the old timers that took the time to pass the message on the way it was passed on to them. It's a remarkable thing because in AA, it's dog rules, man. It's dog rules. We don't know any better when we get here. We don't know how AA works. We don't understand this funny language. Somebody has to take the time to teach us. I mean, I got a dog at home, amazing dog. He's 6 years old now, Bo the Wonder Dog.
Amazing. But Bo, like any other dog at one time, was a puppy. And he didn't know any better. One day, I'm on the phone with a sponsee. Bo, the wonder dog, walks into my view in the living room. A little cute puppy, maybe 2 months old. I love Bo. Bo's looking at me, big grin, talking to my sponsee. Bo goes into a crouch, starts taking a dump. I say out loud, oh no. My sponsee goes, what's going on? I go, ah, Bo's taking a crap in the living room. He goes, do you have to go? I go, no. No, it's too late. You know, I got to let him finish, man. You can't grab a dog in the middle of it, man. You just freak him out. That's not how you do it, man. You got to wait. You got to stalk your own dog, man. You got to look for the signs. And like, right when he's about to do it, then you scoop him up. And he won't know what's going on. Suddenly he'll be in the air like, hey! And you take him outside, man. You put him on the lawn and then you wait. And he looks at you like, what the hell's going on? And he goes, well, I'm out here. I might as well take a dump. And he takes a dump. And then you got to throw a party. Hooray, Bo! You're such a good boy! Who's a good boy? And he goes, oh, dude, I get it. I didn't know. You want me to dump out here. I did not know. And because he wants my approval, he wants my affection, he goes, no problem. And that's the minute he's potty trained for the rest of his life. It takes one time. One time. Because he just wants to make me happy. We do the same thing with newcomers in AA. They come into AA, they come into our home groups, they crap all over the place. Just crap, 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 crap. They don't know any better. It's our job to go up and tell them what to do. Wait for them just before they're going to crap and stop them. We don't do that in AA. And if we love them, if we go shoulder to shoulder with them, if we bring them into our life, maybe you'll have the experience I've had 1,000 times in AA. You'll be at a meeting, you'll watch somebody put up literature, some new guy. Or you'll see some new girl making the coffee. Or even more important, you'll see one of them cordially welcome a new member to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it'll be all you can do not to jump up and down and go, good newcomer, that's so great. Oh, who's a good newcomer? Who's a good newcomer, you know? And that's the chain, man. That's the chain. That's what we pass on here. This isn't my sobriety. It's our sobriety. Not my sobriety. Our sobriety. We've got to help each other. We've got to, everybody's got to be part of the team. We've got to pull people in. We've got patient and loving with our new members. Teach them how to be AA members. We didn't know any better when we got here. And people took the time, so we have to take the time. I'll tell you a real quick story. I'm going to sit down. I'm running out of time here. 13 years ago, my wife and I moved from Los Angeles to the Pacific Northwest, and it was complete culture shock. We're in Bellingham, Washington, 8 miles out of town, out by the lake, and it's dark at night. You know what I mean? It's like darkity dark, dark. And we're city kids. We're concrete, steel, and glass. You know what I mean? And suddenly, we're in the woods. And I remember the first time I forgot something in the car, and I didn't have the porch light on, and I didn't have a flashlight. And I got like halfway to the car like an idiot, and this little voice in my head said, "Cougar." And I just jumped up and just... ran in the house, slammed the door. My wife's like, what's with you? And I'm like, dark, darkity, dark, dark. Don't go out there again. So it took some getting used to, man. And we got wildlife where we live, like bear and coyote and deer. We got tons of deer. And the first summer, man, all the mama deer start showing up in our yard with their spotted fawns. We lost our mind, man. Baby deer, there's nothing cuter. You need 20,000 digital pictures of a baby deer? I got them. And we fell in love with the wildlife. We fell in love with this one baby deer in particular, man. Because he was like, he got something about him. I connected. We had a big scar across his face. You know what I mean? So I had this story in my head like he got into one of the bucks or he ran into a fence. Something dramatic. And so we're city kids. So we're naming the deer. That's Mama Deer and Scratch. Mama Deer and Scratch. And you know, then fall comes, rutting season. The deer start to lose their summer coats and put on their winter coats. But not Scratch. Scratch started looking rough, you know, all patchy, losing his fur. And I said to my wife, I go, Scratch is looking kind of, I don't know, ugly? And she goes, yeah, he is. And she's like that girl, man. And she got on the internet and researched it and reported back to me. It's an actual deer affliction. They get this thing called hair loss syndrome. And if they get it bad enough, they'll lose all their fur. Winter will come. The snows will come. They won't be able to eat enough to get their furnace going. They'll get hypothermic and they'll die. And I go, Scratch is going to die? She goes, yeah. I go, not on our watch. And I lost my mind. My wife lost her mind. We start setting up supplemental feeding stations. We start breaking every wildlife management law in the state of Washington. And when you set up feeding stations in your backyard, you can't feed just the sick deer. So we got deer coming from everywhere. We got
30 deer in our backyard, and you know, some of these deer bucks are 150 pounds, and there's my little 5'4", 130-pound wife chasing off these giant bucks going, "You're selfish, you're self-centered, let the sick one eat." You know, I'm just like... Not me, I'm on the porch going, "Be careful, honey!" You know? And it's not working, man. Scratch is getting worse and worse and worse. And I'd go to work obsessed with this baby deer, and I'd call my wife. I'd go, "Did you see Scratch today?" She'd go, "Yeah, he came by. How's he doing?" "Not good." And I'd shake my fist at God. "Not this one, God." And winter comes, man, and now he's lost all his fur. And all he's got left is like a little 4-inch wide, 4-inch high swatch of fur from the nap of his neck to the rump of his bunk. And we've been overfeeding him, so now he's this sick newcomer deer, rounded out like a beer keg, mohawk wearing, ugly, dying in my backyard. And the snow's coming. I'm building lean-tos in my backyard to give him shelter. He's 4 feet from the lean-to, shivering in the snow. "Get under the shelter, newcomer! The shelter, newcomer!" You know, obsessed with this deer. And spring comes, and Scratch doesn't die. And so for the next 3 or 4 years, every rutting season, he'd come down from the high country with the other boys. This magnificent buck, huge rack. He'd come to our backyard, and he'd just walk right up to my wife. And we knew it was him because of the scar. And my wife would feed him apples by hand. And I'd watch that scene and I'd think to myself, what is it about that damn deer that made me lose my mind? And then one day it hit me. I'm that damn deer. I'm that guy sitting with my back against the wall of the Simi Valley Alano Club with anybody with a glancing familiarity with alcoholism would have taken one look at me and said, that guy over there, he's going to die. And 2 car-carrying members of Alcoholics Anonymous looked at the same thing and they said, not on our watch. And they did what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to tell you something. I know this as much as I'm standing here tonight. It's our watch now. Bill and Bob are gone. They left us a beautiful legacy and all the people before us. But it's our watch now. And why we're in here this weekend, we're going to have a very good time. And why we had some laughs tonight, they're out there on the streets of Atlanta tonight. And they are dying. And you know what's crazier? They're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and they don't even know it yet. They're finishing up their stories. They're running out of hope. They don't know which direction to turn. But they're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and they're coming looking for us. And the question we have to ask ourselves is when they arrive in Alcoholics Anonymous, where will we be? And more importantly, how will we be? Am I going to be in the corner of the room cutting up with my friends, talking about the football game, my latest business deal, what I'm going to do on my fishing trip, where I'm planning a vacation? Or am I going to be like Mark and Lou and how they taught me, with my eyes on the door, my eyes in the room, looking for new men to 12-step? Am I going to be fulfilling my obligation to carrying our primary purpose? Or am I going to turn AA into some social club? Or am I going to leave all that personal crap of mine out in the parking lot where it belongs, where it never should cross the threshold of the spiritual place that is Alcoholics Anonymous? Because don't kid yourself about what we do here. We are in the saving lives business. There are no referrals from AA. There's nobody we go, "Well, we tried to help you, go here." We are the last house on the block. So I'm telling you, thanks for listening. They're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. They're coming looking for us. I hope we're ready. I hope we stay sober forever. Thank you.